Aren't you a technology supplier looking for deal flow? Then you should try our new platform, Connect. It's designed to help buyers and brands find the best tech solutions to match their campaign requirements. It's free for buyers to use and for tech suppliers to set up an account and start applying to campaign briefs. Set up your account today by visiting exchangewire.com/connect or email us at info@thewirecorp.com.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the MadTech Podcast, Christmas special, coming to you via the medium of Zoom from each of our own London quarters.
Yes! Dwayne is in the house.
Happy COVID Christmas!
This is ExchangeWire's Christmas tree.
I cannot believe Kieran got that out.
I know.
How much he hates it.
He hates it a lot. And do you know what, Lindsay? You got it out on a call yesterday with our company lawyer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, what's happening to you?
Well, I'm sorry, but this is a weird year. This is a COVID Christmas, so I have gone the opposite way. Everybody hates Christmas, but I love it. I love Christmas this
and
year.
And embrace. He's cuddling Dwayne, the ExchangeWire
like,
Christmas
I guess
tree.
It's a bit like Christmas and the Black Death. It would have been similar. Everybody's going, oh, I hate Christmas. I'm going, yes, finally, I like it. I'm the contrarian, the ultimate contrarian.
So, listeners, introducing my panellists today. You've already heard a lot from two of them. ExchangeWire CEO Kieran O'Kane, Lindsay Rowntree, Head of Content, and a very special additional guest for this session is ExchangeWire's Editor-in-Chief, Grace Dillon. Hello, Grace.
Hello.
Delighted to be joining us for the madness of the Christmas special podcast, I'm sure.
Highlight of my year. My Christmas wish has been answered.
And listeners, Grace is one of those employees that perhaps many of you have come across this year who joined ExchangeWire in the midst of the pandemic. So actually, we've never worked in the office together, have we, Grace?
No, I think there was
one or two visits to the office.
Yeah, we've met in person, but very fleetingly. So yeah, it's been a bit of an odd year, but you've managed to convey the madness via Google Hangouts, etc. So I've got a good taste.
Excellent. My job here is done. Okay, so format for this week's podcast is I want to hear from each of you as to what are your highlight stories of the year or story, and it's quite possible that story maybe has got many implications for the wider context of ad tech and martech. But basically a summary position on 2020. Lindsay, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, that's surprising.
Unexpected.
Okay. Yes. Wonderful. Mm. Well, so my big story of the year is many stories, but it's one that has just, it's been the backbone of the industry for the year. And no, it isn't COVID. It was in January, unbelievably, it was in January this year that Google announced they were going to be denigrating the third-party cookie. And it feels crazy to think that was, and then they probably thought that would be the biggest news story of the year, and it would, and it certainly has been for many ad tech companies, and it's been something that's always been there, and a lot of the conversations, you know, stuff we've been chatting about on the podcast, kind of in general with our industry peers, have been what that means for the industry, and there's been a lot of scrabbling around trying to find out how we can hack the system, how we can find alternatives. And then obviously in June, Apple then announced they were going to do the same thing with IDFA, and sending the entire in-app ecosystem into a complete tailspin. Apple have now obviously realized that they maybe jumped the gun a little bit too much, and they didn't quite realize how much is required to be done. At least Google have given, you know, within a two-year window. Apple sort of said, we're giving you about 3 months. Which is just nowhere near enough time for any of the companies involved to be prepared for that. So now they've said they'll delay it until 2021, which obviously is very, very helpful. But I think ultimately, what for me is the most interesting bit of this is that it's taken a long time to get there, but all the companies that have been trying to moan about it and find ways to stop Google and Apple doing it have ultimately realized, let's just accept this, and let's accept this as a way for us to find a new way of doing things when it comes to targeted advertising.
I mean, Yeah, that's what, sorry to kind of crush it in. So I was just going to say that's one of the most interesting things associated with this, though, is that we'd started talking about, you know, the disappearance of third-party cookies last year and that it was an inevitability. But it really feels like this year the entire industry has been accelerated into action mode, not least because the announcements finally, you know, sort of, you know, came down the line this year, but also too because everyone's businesses were sort of turned on their heads, even if only for a couple of months at the start of the year as a result of the pandemic. So it kind of got people into this mode of thinking about things from a drastically different point of view.
Yeah, I think that actually you do have to wonder how much impact COVID has had on those conversations, maybe not from an ad tech perspective, but certainly from the perspective of publishers and the perspective of marketers, who digital transformation for these companies this year has never been so stark. And it's been largely, it's been the likes of COVID that has forced this upon them. For the publishers, you know, we heard from the likes of Scott Messer from Leaf Group that talked about this in great length this year, saying that it's given us a chance to kind of shut down, take stock and take everything apart and then clean it up and rebuild it. And that's been a chance for us to be able to look at how we do things differently. And identity and how we treat the third-party cookie has definitely been, will definitely have been a part of that from the publisher's perspective and how the publisher treats the third-party cookie going forward. And then from the marketer's perspective, they've had to really transform digitally. Largely, it's been things like there's been a rise in e-commerce, a rise in how their consumers are transacting digitally with them. But also just generally, it's been a chance for them to kind of, we have to, there's a lot of us things we have to fix right now. And we need to make sure that we are doing that digitally. And if that's making sure more of our budgets go digital, making sure more of our transactions, more of what we do internally goes digital, because we're all working from home, we need to try and make sure that we are ready for that. These conversations have probably helped move the third-party cookie conversation along a bit in terms of advertisers and marketers and publishers looking at first-party data opportunities, looking at how they work together more closely. I do wonder if COVID accelerated that conversation. Otherwise, it could still be a massive topic of conversation 2021. But now it still will be, absolutely. But I think that where 2019 certainly was, we talked about it a lot on stage at ATS across all our events in Singapore, in London, in Paris. Identity was a big topic of conversation, and it still would have been this year. But actually, and obviously it still has been. But I think when everyone's kind of back out in the open, if you like, if we're allowed to be next year, I think that what's happened this year has forced people to look at how they look at their data relationships more closely than they probably otherwise would have done. They've probably spent more time moaning about it than actually actioning it. And I think that's been the important thing.
That's really interesting. Kieran, before I let you off the leash, because I know once we let you start talking, it will be difficult to slow you down. Grace, you know, in joining us earlier on this year, you were relatively new to the industry. Do you feel like your year has been characterized by lots of conversations about third-party cookies and IDFA? Do you feel like it's been an underlying theme in lots of the conversations that you've had from the point of view of crafting and curating and topping and tailing content?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really put the focus on, you know, identity and how companies are going to adjust to be able to, you know, identify users and, you know, actually carry out targeted advertising. So it certainly has had, you know, a massive impact on talking to vendors, their sort of priorities, and then conversations around the issue have been at, you know, the forefront of people's minds within the industry. So it does seem to have, you know, been a sort of landmark occurrence. And, you know, the fact that it was at the very start of the year seems to have really defined people's concerns for 2020 and, well, beyond.
And Kieran, from your point of view, has there been enough action in the industry this year in terms of trying to deal with the deprecation of cookies and IDFA?
No.
Thought you might say that.
There has not. There is, look, Google are shifting the goalposts on the deprecation of third-party cookies. I mean, they're supposed to do it next year or the year after. They might push that later into the decade because they're under such scrutiny from anti-competitive legislation or
action.
I think the Apple thing is going to be the biggest impact in the first instance. I think the IDFA thing is huge, and Apple have not relented. And obviously this week you see, I mean, this is the comedy strategy of a lifetime is that Facebook took out a full page in the Wall Street Journal yesterday.
That was really interesting.
Against Apple. Deprecation of IDFA. And it's just
How unfair it is. How unfair it is to Facebook.
The businesses that rely on Facebook. And it sounds to me that some companies are going to be affected by this more than others. And Facebook are going to have some serious problems by not being able to kind of like wrap their third party tag around, third party sites and apps. And feed their data pool, But the industry just needs to get used to these identifiers not being available.
Maybe actually, Kieran, when we come onto your favourite stories of the year, we can also talk about some of the innovation that's risen up, from the ashes of 2020, shall we say. Some of that innovation was already well underway in 2019. But before I come to you, Grace, please share with us what your news story of the year is.
Top story was the announcement by Marguerite Vestager that she plans to use more injunctions to crack down on anti-competitive behaviour after the EU imposed what are called interim measures on Broadcom, which is a US chip maker, to essentially stop them from carrying out some anti-competitive practices. And the measures essentially put a stop to whatever practice the company is doing. So they can't, make any revenue off of that practice until the probe is resolved. And in this case, the Broadcom probe took under a year, so it was clearly very successful. And Vestager basically said that, this is something that the EU would like to pursue going forward, because as we've seen, they've levied a number of fines against big tech players that have really amounted to very little change. So I think it'd be very interesting to see if that does actually happen in the next year and what impact it will have, because it does seem that ordering these companies to halt their activities and, stop being able to make money will be more damaging than just,
fining them. Yeah.
Especially since the fines don't really, when you consider how much money they make, the fines are a bit of a pittance, really.
Totally. Small change. 100%. Kira, you're very fond of Margaret Vestager.
I think Grace has hit the nail on the head there. That is a very interesting move by the EU. And there's actually some legislation coming to the European Parliament about gatekeepers. Maybe Grace covered that, but she definitely covered that in one of the pieces she did. But the idea that if you have more than 40 million users on your platform, you have to abide by certain platform criteria. I.e., you can't push your own stuff. Google has literally taken a knife to anybody who runs search in the airline industry, restaurants. They have literally their own solutions that they push out and they promote on the Google search engine. So the idea is that if you have a platform, you have to play by certain criteria. And if you don't abide by the rules, the EU has the option of fining you 10% of your entire revenue, global revenue, right? Which means that Google could be fined $10 billion in 1 year if they consistently break the rules.
And that's going to hurt a lot more than any other fines that we've been talking about. 10% of revenue is not something any company wants to weather.
But I think the fear here for the platforms is that the fines can be just charged in an arbitrary fashion, not through a court, right? So where you might have a court case take 2 or 3 years to go through, and then there's a slap on the wrist and you get a fine. Margaret Vestager and the European Union is saying, look, these are the rules you must play by in the European Union, right? If you break these rules, you have to pay these fines, right? So suddenly Google has a financial incentive not to break the rules. Amazon has a financial incentive not to break the rules. Now, if they decide, this is just a speed bump, I'm going to pay this, but geez, $10 billion at a time is not a speed bump. It's bloody profit, right, in a quarter. But if you keep breaking the rules, then the EU has the option of forcing you to divest of certain assets that are a hindrance to competition in the market. Mm. And this is pretty strong stuff. Like, I don't know how watered down this would be. This would become once it goes through the parliament. But I feel that, I mean, this is the year of the breakup, right? This is where it's starting. Like, you know, we've been talking about it for years, but like, I'll come on to my stories in a minute. But like, this is this.
Well, yeah, they'd better not be the same as my stories because they've got a bit of a breakup thing too.
Oh, that's tough. you're gonna have to roll with it.
But I mean, I guess, you know, the interesting point about the story, Grace, that you've settled on is that, you know, this is the EU trying to find other mechanisms over and above fining. And what I've found very interesting about this year is that regulators, government authorities, anti-competition bodies have all been watching very closely what one another are doing across global regions and sharing some, I mean, you know, quite possibly this is something that they do ordinarily anyway, sharing examples of good practice. But it feels like in the world of media and advertising, we're really starting to see some big examples of this. It's as though the EU is saying, look, we find big tech companies and we've seen how other governments and legislators have fined big tech companies. We can see it's not really making that much of a difference, so we're going to start using a different mechanism. To what extent, I'm wondering, will other territories and other governments start to do something similar? Because one of the features of this year that I found interesting was Australia's News Media Bargaining Code, you know, first sort of flouted at the beginning of the year and has throughout the year, as it's been, you know, tabled in Parliament and debated and redrafted and discussed with various media companies and news media publishers and tech companies to be refined, has become really quite sophisticated. And actually, it's now going to provide the basis for a commercial bargaining agreement or commercial bargaining code that can be undertaken between publishers and big tech companies. And that's an example of something that I think might be adopted elsewhere. So, you know, to what extent do you guys think that people might look at what Margaret Vestager is doing and think, in other countries, in the US and elsewhere, and think, yeah, fining only takes us so far. We need to do something else. We need some other levers.
I think we definitely, I think there'll definitely be close attention paid to what Margaret's doing, to what the ACCC in Australia are doing. You know, the UK is certainly kind of keeping their eye on what everyone else is doing because it's no longer being part of the EU. We can copy other blueprints and we can come up with our own ideas. And I actually, funnily enough, had a press release drop in my inbox a few weeks ago that said that the ICO is doing a terrible job of collecting fines. So of the something like 20 million or something it's fined so far, it hasn't been able to get about 60% of the fines. So
I'm not surprised by that.
January 2019 to now, it's still waiting for about 14 million in fines. And it's got debt collectors in. And even then, it still can't retrieve the fines. So it just kind of shows you this fining thing is not working at the moment. But, you know, Kieran's saying about the fact that it's going through the courts and it just takes too long. And the process with which you would then pay the fine just doesn't work, doesn't suit us kind of taking this seriously and trying to make meaningful change and trying to get the tech companies to take it seriously. Actually, imposing these fines on them and saying you have to fine immediately and making it something substantial in terms of a fine versus their global revenue or versus their revenue in that country, or actually imposing some kind of injunction, like Grace said, what Margaret Vestager is doing, makes a whole lot more sense than what most countries are currently doing.
Yeah, 100%. Kieran, share with us your news story of the year.
Well, look, it's suing you, Rachel.
Which is my news story. This is the FTC suing Facebook, isn't it?
That is too bad. It's Facebook being... It's two cases in particular, right? And okay. It's two cases... the year has been dominated by COVID, right? And, you know, that's it. But this is the year that we are going to see these big tech platforms broken up.
2021 is the year we're going to see that. Yeah.
Lindsay and Grace have already touched on this, but for me, it's the Facebook getting sued by the 50 state attorneys and the DOJ, and some really interesting stories around that. Like, so they've integrated Instagram into Facebook so tightly that it'd be hard to spin that out.
But deliberately
we
so.
We might end up losing WhatsApp, which means I can still keep using it, Rachel. At the minute, I'm deliberating whether I delete it from my phone.
You've been telling us for years. Yeah, you've been telling us that.
But I would like Facebook not to own WhatsApp. I just don't want to be associated with that company. But it's just interesting that case is so. Has such widespread support from both Republicans and Democrats in the US, right? It's not just one or the other backing it. It's actually a collection of all of the Democrat and Republican state attorneys and the DOJ. And like the case against Facebook is going to be pretty tight. Like Facebook's going to argue this whole China thing and blah, blah, blah. We have to have, you know, it'd be the anti-China bullshit story that they've been spinning. But the Chinese are doing the similar thing in China where they're taking on big tech. For instance, and this is going feeding, and this is the story of the year, them canceling, probably one of the big stories, them canceling the Ant IPO. The fintech arm of Alibaba and Jack Ma's next big story. And the 11th hour, right in the middle of this presidential campaign in the US, the Chinese decided to cancel it because Jack Ma is getting too big for his boots in China. So you have a communist regime, you have a capitalist regime, both thinking that big tech is too powerful for its own good. So this is the year, I think, that we're going to see the start of the great unwind in big tech, because we've had enough. They suck up all the oxygen in the room. They take all the margin. They're killing any kind of innovation. They're forcing people into shittier industries that don't need innovation at all. And they're just taking all the lion's share. So, you know, Margaret Vestager has got them in her sights. The American legal system has got them in their sights. And only yesterday, Google, it was announced that the Texas is leading a case against Google in ad tech. The first of its kind. Although it seems to be, unfortunately, all Republicans. So
what's the allegation? Do you know what the specific allegation is?
They're alleging that there was collusion between Facebook and Google around rigging auctions, which is quite interesting. And they were using Star Wars character names in the whole process. It's all over Twitter.
Well, that reminds me of ATS in Sydney back in 2011 or whatever, when Mark Britz compared Google to the Death Star.
Yeah, Jesus, that was a long time ago. But then I think about it, it's come to fruition.
The powers of prediction,
I'm not so sure how much that case will get any. Well, you know, Republicans, it's just interesting that ad tech has been adopted by Republicans. I'm not sure how I feel about it. And Texas is the same state attorney took a case to the Supreme Court trying to overturn the election results. So let's see how far that gets. But you can see the bones of this happening. And why is this important for us as a business? You know, exchange wire, obviously more ad tech, more money we make from events and stuff. So great for us. But for an industry, it opens up more opportunity, right? Google starts has to start playing rules. Will they spin out DoubleClick and their ad tech stack as a separate entity? You know, Facebook loses WhatsApp.
What does that do to its user numbers? What does that do to its, its attractiveness to brands and marketers as an advertising opportunity?
Well, WhatsApp doesn't make any money, so technically,
not Facebook. I'm thinking.
Yeah, well, Facebook has got a lot of opportunity around e-commerce, which they haven't explored yet. So they won't run out of runway in terms of revenue. But this is the year of the great breakup, I think.
Lindsay, Grace, any thoughts on that?
Go on, Grace, over to you.
I actually didn't read the entire article, but I saw an article saying that it would take about 3 to 5 years to actually break big tech up. So
it's not going to happen in 2021.
Not to rain on your parade, Kieran.
Rain on his parade, Grace. Go on.
I would just add a caveat to what I just said there. I'm not assessed. I think they'll take their own action rather than be broken up. They will break themselves up.
Okay. Preemptive
strike is the right word I would use, or right phrase, sorry.
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't put it beyond them. Yeah. I mean, I was reading about Facebook is shifting all the UK, its UK users to agreements in the US so it can, you know, get away from the EU. So
it definitely seems to be privacy laws. Yeah, that's unbelievable. Yeah.
yeah, so you know, I think they are very I don't want to say devious, but
manipulative.
They like to find ways.
They're devious. They are devious. Exactly what they are.
Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously echo everything that Kieran said. I think it's going to be what makes me laugh about all this is there's been a lot of infighting between them all this year that I've just found very enjoyable. It's just been hilarious, you know, that like the Facebook open letter to Apple is brilliant, because at the time, back in June when Apple announced they were going to be moving IDFA, Facebook were quite blasé about it, in the sense of they just went, we're not supporting it. So if you want to use us, you're going to need to create a new Facebook advertisers account. Here's how you do that. Sort of whatever. Like, we don't really, we won't support this, but we're not going to really kind of kick up a fuss about it at the same time. So they've obviously in the last 6 months really had to think about, actually, this really does screw us over. We need to make it clear that this is going to be a huge problem for us, and we're going to have a massive, massive drop in revenue. At the time they made it clear to their advertisers, you will lose revenue off the back of this. You absolutely will, because we can't do the same targeting and tracking that we're able to via any kind of Facebook in-app advertising. But they didn't really, it all felt a bit muted. So to suddenly out of nowhere just then go, you're fucking over the industry, you're fucking over us. And then just kind of the infighting that's gone on generally between Apple and other big tech companies, and you know, the likes of them trying to, I mean, big tech companies, I'm talking about things like Epic Games trying to sue Apple. And there's just been so much kind of attacking each other, as well as government attacking them and then them attacking governments. It's actually been quite funny. Kind of cat fights.
There's been a lot of cat fighting, right? And the other thing that I've been surprised about this year is the lack of sophistication of some of the arguments that some of these big tech players have put forward in their defence of anti-competition complaints or, moves that have been made by other tech companies that are negatively impacting another tech company. I don't feel like their positioning has been very sophisticated, and I kind of would like to say that I think Facebook are wasting their money paying Nick Clegg to do whatever job he's allegedly doing for them, because it's not really working. I just, yeah.
That's clear here. Nick Clegg's a bell end.
There we go.
Yeah, a politician. Bell end is Facebook's PR.
Well, I don't imagine there's anyone under probably 25 or 26 in the UK that's got any respect for Nick Clegg, because he screwed students over on tuition fees.
Yeah. Maybe we always knew that he was that type of person. Like, as soon as he got power, he screwed over the students, the people who, I mean, like, what the hell was that about?
Grace, for the benefit of any of our international listeners, do you want to tell us what Nick Clegg did to you and your poor fellow student colleagues?
So prior to the general election in, was it 2011? I can't remember the year.
Yeah.
He vowed that the Lib Dems, which he was the leader of, wouldn't raise tuition fees. So at the time, it would cost £3,000 per term. Oh, sorry, no, per year for your university course. And he vowed that if elected, they would not change that. The election resulted in a coalition between the Conservatives and the Lib Dems, and under that, tuition fees went up to £9,000 a year. So,
unbelievable.
Nick.
3 times. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're a legend. Let me just. So, I was going to choose as my story of the year FTC suing Google, but Kieran obviously trumped me there. So, let's instead talk about some other highlights of the year. The first one that's springing to mind is the rise in popularity of gaming and, the impact that that's had on advertising and marketing, but also too because I found myself gaming this year and I never have before in my entire life. So what the hell, that's all about 2020. And also the rise in e-com and any online sales that has hugely benefited any retailer or any company that's able to sell their stuff online. I just think those two things have heralded a change that is here to stay. So I think gaming's going to become so much more mainstream and widespread from this year onwards. And of course that brings with it huge opportunities for gaming app developers and publishers, but also for advertising and marketing. And I also just think e-com almost won't even be considered as e-com anymore. It will just be the way we buy stuff. It's just become suddenly so much more mainstream for consumers, but also for anyone that ever wants to sell anything. And it has to have been, if you think about the big the big brand and marketer sort of, you know, boon stories of the year, it's anyone that already had a really sophisticated e-commerce offering. So even in terms of supermarkets here in the UK, Ocado must have just have had the best year they've ever, ever, ever had on record and must be going into 2021 so strongly. And that will be because of the sophisticated infrastructure, not just the fact that everybody's flocked to an online environment. And then think about maybe some more traditional retailers that have just hugely improved their e-com online offering and done it at a pace that they didn't think was going to be possible if it wasn't for the way that this year is sort of shaken out. Yeah. What do you guys think about that? Don't all speak at once. Okay, I'll go. I think that with every kind of good story about that, there's also been the terrible ones of more legacy retailers that have gone under, and that's been down to them being slow on the uptake and them having legacy business practices that meant they weren't able to survive, and that's obviously the sadness. But I think that, as well as I talked about it earlier, kind of the huge amount of digital transformation that's been happening with marketers this year, that rings very true with the e-commerce side of things as well, and how they realize, okay, this is what our consumers want and need. How do we get there? How do we get to them? And how do we do it quickly? I think the benefit of that has been, as well as them kind of being on the front foot when it comes to this, they've had the benefit of working with some really good tech companies to help them along the way. Like, if you think about how Shopify will have helped, like companies like Shopify will have helped them really hone their e-commerce offering, help them become more consumer-led, help them improve their UI, help them improve their back end, improve their logistics, improve their fulfillment. There's been a lot, you know, in a world where, you know, there's been challenges with deliveries, challenges with logistics, there's been delays because of, you know, all sorts of things. I think there's been a lot of interesting, innovative tech companies that have really helped them along the way there and helped them with their e-commerce offering, but also to help them tie that into their acquisition performance marketing model and how they ensure they're not just improving their e-commerce offerings, but improving how they get those offerings in front of potential customers and improve their targeted advertising opportunities. And there's been some interesting stuff there. We talked a few weeks ago, for example, about Shopify doing a deal with TikTok to allow advertisers to basically be able to track their TikTok advertising campaigns with Shopify. It's examples like that really show there's a lot of benefit to these companies working how they can work together, and the marketers really understanding how they get in front of their consumers, understanding their consumers. And that ties into gaming as well. Hopefully this year is the year, Rachel, you saying that even you became a gamer. People might think you're sitting there in front of a PS4 with a controller, but actually that's not what you mean at all. You mean you've been gaming on your phone. And hopefully this year is the year that marketers understand what a gamer looks like. And that means a gamer is anybody and everybody. And it's not just somebody with a console, with an expensive gaming chair, an expensive, you know, with a headset on. All of us are gamers in some way or another, and all of us use gaming as a form of release, a form of escape, whatever else, a form of enjoyment. And there is so much that marketers can do with looking at what a gamer is and how they can target them. And hopefully this year that's been realised with the massive acceleration in gaming. Yeah. Kieran, is your gaming efforts increased this year?
Well, you're doing
your online poker, obviously.
I'm playing a lot of Zynga on online poker for free, obviously. I was 150 million up, and then I'm down to 2 million now at the minute. Like, you know, it's yin and yang. But I agree with Lindsay that typecast around gamers has been like,
obliterated this year.
It's been on too long, and you know, it's just another entertainment channel that they need to kind of get their heads around. It's just like, it's like TV and radio and the open web, and it's a shame it's taken this long. But like, you know, I think that it's interesting that, you know, I don't believe in this that we've gone to this nirvana of digitization. I think a lot of people are going to go back to some things like, you know, traveling and holidaying, and people are dying to get any kind of like human experience, you know, social experience. I think offices will come back, but there will be certain things that are ingrained now for the next decade, right? An older generation being comfortable ordering, shopping online, for instance, and doing more stuff online. I think that trend has just been sped up by at least 2 or 3 years, right? Which is great for our business, because programmatic advertising is a way to scale across all those channels. But as Lindsay pointed out, the sad thing is that, but it's not really sad because it's been coming for a while, is that the British, well, the high street in Ireland and Britain, you know, has been always important for towns and villages, right? But now that's going to the wall because these big box stores that were paying over the odds for rent can't afford economically to have physical stores. So what I think is going to happen is a renaissance of the physical sort of high street in the sense that you will not have those Debenhams. They're out of business. Arcadia has gone to the wall. Most of the restaurant chains are going to the wall as well. So we'll have a return to independence on the high street, more experiential stuff. So I could see, like, while it's negative, I see a renaissance coming. I think the commercial rent's kind of come down as well, which is good.
It's just going to result in a recalibration of that economic model.
The economy. But in the meantime, that's hard because a lot of these companies hired a lot of people, right? So people are losing their jobs and it's very sad. And how do you retrain them? And then the dark side of it is that, you know, Amazon gets stronger all the time. We all buy Amazon. Amazon's become this just go-to for everything in e-commerce. And that's the frightening part, is that we're handing a lot more power to these companies. But the good thing is, I think the legislators are there now to realize that is a problem. So it's amazing all these stories are kind of fitting together, like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's,
well, and it sort of makes me wonder, you know, we've talked a lot internally here at ExchangeWire this year, how 2020 has provided us with the opportunity to do some things that we wouldn't have otherwise had time for. So for us internally, that's meant less time out traveling, less time sort of running our ATS events across the globe, more time working on some products that we've been busy trying to develop and trying to build, more time on working out, you know, various sort of structures and formats and ways of working that are going to make operations much more efficient across our company, more time to devote to brand new ideas and, you know, and new things that we want to sink our teeth into. And it sort of feels like that's perhaps been mirrored across the industry to a certain extent. This has been a year of being able to sort of stand back. And because you're not sort of, you know, poured into your usual day-to-day routines, you've been able to see things from a slightly different perspective. And we're now starting to see the collision of a few things that are going to result in some significant change for our industry, for also for other consumer industries in general, for advertising and marketing in much more of a general capacity. And I wonder if that's kind of the takeaway for 2020.
Yeah. I think that's correct, and you could be overly pessimistic about the current state of things, that the 1%ers or the 0.01%ers have just got more of the but like the reimagining of the physical high street is really exciting. I think that, I mean, from a non-digital kind of way, that's really exciting, and I think that digital kind of has a place to play as well. DTC, can you imagine there'll be lots of DTC type stores popping up, like just like demonstrating products. I think there's going to be, I think this year has been tough for
everybody.
Yeah. And you're right about the recalibration of the economy. Look, for programmatic, for the listeners, it's fucking great. Like, you know, all the wind is blowing in our sails, right? Digitization, possible anti-competitive action against the platforms. I even think the degradation of cookies are actually a good thing as well, because it's leading us to innovate. We're seeing a wave of really good European companies pop up.
Yeah, we haven't even really touched on that.
It's very true.
Yeah. Since we're running out of time, before we sign off, Grace, tell us about your gaming activity, just because you're the youngest.
Surprisingly enough, I haven't gamed that much. Most of my gaming's been watching my other half playing FIFA, but
that's like a proper young person's activity. Yeah, she's watching other people game.
Yeah, because she's now in esports because she's actually viewing someone else play.
I suppose so. Funnily enough, before I actually met my other half, I had a virtual date with another person, which involved gaming. We signed up to it was a co-op gaming date, which was
quite
an interesting experience.
Brilliant.
So we signed up to Steam.
Yeah.
So that was how we met and, you know, got to know each other. And
you kids and today,
not,
wow.
Not meet up again.
That's brilliant. That's like the proper spectrum of gaming we've got there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Grace doing some gaming dating. Me playing bloody, you know, crappy word games on my phone. Kieran gambling.
Yeah. What is it? Bobalicious?
No. It's like word game stuff.
Crosswords.
Yeah, or so there's Scrabble, obviously. I play that with my mum online. Here we are. We're getting into proper middle-aged person gaming territory now. And then I play other word games. And then also I play Lumosity. Yeah, we've talked about this many times. Brain training games.
What's one I play? There's a training game app that Lindsay got me onto.
Elevate.
Elevate.
Yeah.
Lindsay, how's your gaming been going this year?
It's mostly brain training. Yeah. So it's Elevate, Lumosity and Peak are the ones I'm into on the brain training front. Okay. And they're what I... It's another similar one, but slightly different game, slightly different way of doing them. I try and do all three of them. But I did, during lockdown, did get up to like a 117-day streak on Elevate. And then I... lockdown broke and I completely forgot about it. And I was like, oh my God, I was devastated. I'd lost my streak. But yeah, that's basically what I've been doing. And word games. I do enjoy Scrabble. I did go through a Scrabble phase and word streak phase. And now I'm into Nonogram.
Nonogram?
Nonogram. Yeah, I do enjoy Nonogram.
Right.
Yeah.
Jotting all of this down along with recommendations for books.
I'm a big fan of Elevate. I think it's just really good.
I'm going to try it. Yeah, I've been great. Too focused on Lumosity. But yeah,
it's a different part of your brain than Lumosity.
Okay.
It's more like English and math focused than it is around kind of like spatial reasoning and that sort of stuff. So yeah. it's really good.
Building blocks effectively communication.
Grace is just, you know, for the benefit of listeners, Grace is just politely nodding at us, thinking, listen to the old folks talk about big gaming habits.
Does Duolingo count as a game? I've been doing that.
Yeah.
Duolingo's great. I'm learning some Chinese because, you know, you're going to need it.
As soon as we're allowed, you're going to need it.
I, for one, welcome our Chinese overlords.
You've been saying that for years. Now it's actually got some meaning.
No, it's true.
Okay, I'm going to bring I'm bringing this to a close before Kieran tries to practice his Chinese on us, his Mandarin on us. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, go on. Christmas tree and the Christmas party. Oh, you turned him off just at the most exciting bit. Anyway.
Happy COVID Xmas.
Yeah, yes. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks very much for listening. Thanks for listening. Oh my God, Kieran, you never stop talking.
Why is it talking? Come true in 2022.
Right, great. Yep, thank you. And thanks everybody for listening. And that was this week's crazy end of year Christmas special Mad Tech podcast.
Here at ExchangeWire, we spent the past few months building a new platform called Connect. It helps buyers and brands find the best tech solutions for their media campaigns. It's free for buyers to list their campaign requirements and for tech suppliers to set up an account so they can get connected to buyers. Find out more at exchangewire.com/connect or by emailing info@thewirecorp.com.